Okay, the Commission on Equitable Housing and Development meeting has now commenced. It is January 4th at 4 p.m. This meeting is being held virtually due to COVID-19. As we continue our efforts in meeting remotely, we ask all commissioners and guests to mute yourselves until called upon to speak to avoid feedback and background noise. For those who have dialed in using a call-in number, to unmute to speak, dial *6 on your phone. Also, prior to speaking, please announce who you are to identify yourself. As a reminder, this meeting is being recorded. We ask that you only use the chat function to request to speak or to announce that you are leaving the meeting so we can track quorum. Also, to comply with the state open meeting law, attendance and votes will be done by way of roll call using audio, not by using the chat function. So for a roll call, Maggie Amato-Tayez.
Present.
Wendy Asher. I saw Wendy. Marianne Beerling.
Present.
Mindy Bernstein.
Present.
Mark Clark.
Here.
Vicky Casino. Vicky's not here. Lori Mazurbo.
Present.
Tisha Tallman.
Here.
Jim Toffel, I'm here. Ray Winch.
Here.
Kenny Wong.
Here as well.
And Jay Young.
I'm here.
Okay, and our ex officio member is Ann Shenanka.
Here.
Corin Manning. Corin said she was going to be here in about an hour, so she's not present, but she'll be joining us later. Betty Villegas. Betty's not here. Marcos Ismail. Marcos isn't here either. I was hoping Marcos would be here. Okay. Okay, first order of business is to review the meeting minutes from December 7th. Actually, okay, those meeting minutes have been posted online.
They also were sent to members when I sent out the agenda.
Right. So are there any changes to the meeting minutes? Okay, then without objection, we will approve the meeting minutes. Third agenda item is the call to the audience. And this is a time when any member of the public may address the Commission on Equitable Housing and Development. Due to time constraints, the total time allocated for this is 15 minutes. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes each due to open meeting laws. Commission members cannot discuss topics that are not on the agenda, but items brought up by the public may be considered as an agenda item for a future meeting. So is there anybody who would like to speak, any of the attendees? Mike? Hey, Mike.
Hello, all. Michael Edmonds. Some people call me Mike. Happy New Year, everyone. I just wanted to make this announcement, real quick announcement, because I watch it pretty closely. Just in case for those who don't know and maybe spread the information around. Operation Deep Freeze is in effect, and it went into, I think the notice was posted yesterday, January the 3rd. People can go to the Salvation Army Hospitality House at 1002 North Main Avenue between 2 and 4 in the afternoon for intake. There are a limited number of overflow shelter beds there. There's more information about Operation Deep Freeze up on the City of Tucson's website. If it's okay with the commission and Ernesto, I can put the web link in chat for you to share. Other than that, I've just been watching the weather forecast for, let's say, the next week and a half. And, you know, this could run for a while, I think. So I just wanted to share that information with everyone. And thanks for the time.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Is there anybody else who would like to speak?
Jim, it appears that there's a comment from Call to the Public in the chat.
Bob Delaney, question for Call to the Public. Does Tucson have a land bank? If not, is this something worth pursuing in 2024? I've heard that they work well with the community land trust to create long-term affordability. Technically, I don't know that we can answer this question right now. Is that right, Mike? Is that right, Neto?
I'll defer to Anne on this question.
Yeah, I have two things. Correct. If the commission wants to talk about land banks, we can agendize it on a future meeting. That said, Bob, I can have Sarah Megason reach out to you. She's here. But we can talk to you about some of the things that we do know are happening, but could be a good agenda item for a future meeting.
I'm not sure I even understand what the land bank is. I know if we should add that as an agenda item, but if that's something that commissioners want to see happen, we could do that. Anybody else like to speak? Bob, if you're interested in speaking, you can still speak. We're still on agenda item number 3.
Can you hear me?
I can.
You can?
Yep.
Okay. I had just done some reading, one of the professors at the U of A said that land banks, which are state enabling legislation is required, and I don't believe Arizona has any, have unique powers to pick up properties that are in foreclosure or have tax lien delinquencies, those kinds of things. And then they clear up title, and then oftentimes they're able to pass along a very low basis to community land banks. They don't hold the properties long term. So it just seemed, like the two could work very well together. And there may be complications I'm unaware of, but I just think it might be worth a look for the commission. That's all.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Any other comments from the public? All right, our next agenda item is agenda item number 4, which is a presentation by the applicants for funding in the City of Tucson's PCHIC program. Affordable housing project presentations will be scored by non-conflicted members of the commission as reflected by the evaluation selection criteria of the RFP. So I have to recuse myself from this portion of the discussion. So I'm going to hand it over to Jay Young. But just as a point of clarification before we begin, is there an expectation by HCD that we are going to score these today? Or are we going to listen to the presentations, score them over the next month, and then come back at the next meeting with the scores and the recommendations?
Sure. Thanks, Jim. So the expectation is that the commissioners score the presentations either today or by 5 p.m. tomorrow, so that each commissioner does their scoring pretty quickly after the presentation. We know it's the end of the day today, so I want to give you tomorrow as an opportunity there to complete your scores. We'll then average the commission's scores for each project, and that will be one part of the overall project score that will result in the funding recommendations.
Okay, so the expectation is that by end of day tomorrow, they'll send you an email with the project score. So I think just as from a process perspective, it might be good to since we have a lot of people here looking to give presentations, it might be good to review the scoring criteria before the presentations quickly, and then we can go through the presentations. And then one last question is, are the scores going to be confidential from the commissioners?
Yes. So first, to the point of reviewing the evaluation criteria, we do have a brief presentation we will make before any of the presentations begin, reviews the evaluation criteria, conflicts of interest, and our process. So we'll share that momentarily. And scores will be confidential. And just to a clarification there, the scores won't be emailed. There is the link that we emailed to commissioners earlier this morning. It's also in the chat right now for all of the commissions. If you're a commissioner on the host and panel set, you can now see that that link as well. You'll actually just complete your scores right there in that survey link and then click submit, and then they'll automatically come to us. And yes, they are confidential.
Okay, so I have to recuse myself. I know Marianne Beerling has to recuse herself. Is there any other voting commissioners who have to recuse yourself from this portion of the discussion?
And what may be helpful here is if we can go through that initial presentation, because that'll review what the what would constitute a conflict of interest, which will then allow folks to self-identify.
I have another quick question. Jason, is there any, this feels like it came very late and very quick, that we need to listen to the presentations and then score by tomorrow afternoon. Is this because the city, is there any room to provide us a little more time to digest and read and research and get clear on what our answers are? And also, it's not confidential. You will know who we are within.
Yes, I will as receiving them, but the applicants will not. And so we have to know on HCD's side, because we have to confirm that that survey came from a legitimate non-conflicted commissioner.
More importantly for me, is there any time, is it, there any ability, or is it necessary that you have it done by tomorrow because of whatever, the universe?
Yeah, so a couple things and great questions, Mindy. So first, just to kind of refresh the commission, as you may remember, the meeting at which we were slated to really talk through this whole process with the commission and kind of prep the commission for it ended up being canceled due to a lack of quorum. And so then we had shared briefly at the next meeting, this is coming next meeting. We're sorry, we don't have much opportunity to kind of prepare you for it at this point because of that quorum issue and the timing of this competition. We have to make our awards in time for applicants that are planning on applying for low-income housing tax credits to be able to submit their LIHTC applications in April. So we can absolutely extend that timeline a bit. I would say probably until next Wednesday is probably the best we could do there. And for what it's worth, we are only asking you to score the presentation you receive. We are not asking you, and you should not go do additional research about the projects. This portion of the scoring, it's one component of the overall score for a project. We have the review panel, which is fully reviewing all of the project applications and details. This portion is specifically scoring the commission's perception of the project impact based on the presentation.
Thank you. That clarifies that for me. Thank you.
Okay, so assuming that Marianne and me are the only two who have to recuse ourselves from this portion of the discussion, I believe we still have 8 voting commission members here, so we still meet quorum. I am going to hand this off to Jay to run the rest of this agenda, and then I'll jump back in when we get to agenda item number 5.
All right, thanks, Jim. So, Jason, are you up with a presentation to get us started?
Yeah, so happy to do that. Neto, it looks like I'm still not able to share, though, if you could allow me to share my screen. Perfect. Thank you. So we do have a number of presentations, so I will try to move through this pretty quickly. Please absolutely let me know if I'm moving too quickly. I know I can speak fast. So As I mentioned, the scoring today is specifically of the presentations and project impact. So our process for today's meeting, each applicant who applied to our home and state and local fiscal recovery fund, rental housing development and preservation request for proposals will have 5 minutes to present their project. We will time those presentations and we will cut each applicant off at 5 minutes just to ensure that every applicant has the same amount of time and a fair opportunity relative to other applicants to share their project. Non-conflicted members of the commission will score the presentation on a scale of 0 to 25 based on established evaluation criteria, which we will take a look at in a moment. That evaluation criteria is additionally listed at the top of the scoring survey, so that as you're in that survey, you can see the criteria there as well. And then each presentation must be scored on its own merits. So there won't be opportunity for questions to the applicants. And that's really to ensure that every applicant has the same amount of time and space. The evaluation criteria that are being used were shared with applicants in the request for proposals, and again, when their application was submitted, so that they could prepare for today's meeting. The specific evaluation criteria, we're asking each panelist to score only on the extent to which the project demonstrates its community impact by describing the cost per unit and why that cost is appropriate based on the project details, the incorporation of green and or sustainable building practices and features in the project, the target population to be served and how the surrounding neighborhood offers opportunities for that population, and the project's opportunity score, and explains how the project addresses community need and other benefits of the project. And an important note here, so we've developed an opportunity map that results in an opportunity score for any parcel in the region. And so we're asking each applicant to share that opportunity score with you, but we're beta testing that opportunity map. So you don't want to necessarily score on what the opportunity score is, but rather on how the applicant explains how the project is addressing the community need and other benefits. So the opportunity score is one way to illustrate that, but you want to hear the full presentation of how the applicants illustrate that. Now to review conflicts of interest. So members of the commission may not participate if they have a real or perceived interest in one of the proposed projects. Examples of those types of conflicts of interest include being a project developer, co-developer, or consultant, being a known or likely contractor or subcontractor on the project, being an employee of the developer, co-developer, contractor, or subcontractor, and having an immediate family member who meets the definitions above. And then lastly, anyone who has any type of financial interest in any one of these projects may not participate in the scoring process. There are a total of 6 presentations you'll receive today. We're going to hear those presentations in alphabetical order by the name of the development, not by the name of the developer. So first we'll hear from Chicanos por la Causa with Casa del Pueblo Apartments, then from Casa Maria Tucson with El Camino Apartments, then from Spire Development Incorporated with Rincon Manor, then from Rio Azul Partners with Rio Azul, then from Cope Community Services with Shasta Apartments, and lastly from Gorman & Company with the Tucson House. So these are the 6 presentations we'll hear today and the order in which we'll hear them. That is the full preparatory presentation. I would ask if panelists are, or if commissioners are able, if you've noted that you're able to access that scoring survey in the chat. I see nods happening, so that's positive. Okay. In that case, we're good to move forward to the first presentation, Jay, unless there are any questions from the commissioners. Oh, and I see Mindy's hand is up. So there looks like there's a question. Oh, or maybe just still up.
Got to take it down. My apologies.
Perfect. All right. Are there any questions from the commissioners? In that case, Jay, we're good to begin with Casa del Pueblo.
Great. Take it away.
Who's presenting from Casa del Pueblo? Is it Nicholas Gonzalez?
That's so. I think it might be Michael Smithson attendees.
Okay.
Might need
to. Can everyone hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yes.
Great. I apologize. I don't know how to turn on my camera, but so I'll just launch into it. So Casa del Pueblo is a 96 unit age restricted independent senior living apartment community, serving low income seniors age 62 and older, making 40% or less of the area median income. Chicanos por la Causa built the project under the Section 202 program in two phases in 1997 and 2011, respectively, and the property is currently fully occupied. The surrounding neighborhood provides opportunities for low-income residents. The project is located in the Sunnyside neighborhood of Tucson. It's adjacent to the Roy Laus Transit Center and El Pueblo Park, with community amenities in the park, such as the Frank de la Cruz El Pueblo Public Library and El Pueblo Senior Center. The project's also less than 2 miles from the Tucson Spectrum Shopping Center, which allows residents access to shopping, groceries, restaurants, and entertainment, all within a 5 minute drive or approximately 30 minutes walking or via public transportation. The project is also located in the Norte Sur Transit Planning Area and just blocks from the La Doce South 12th Avenue redevelopment area, both of which were identified in the Housing Affordability Strategy for Tucson Plan. The project's city opportunity score is 40. CPLC is requesting home funds as a leveraged component. I've just got a pop-up. Join as panel. Muted. No, I'm muted. Okay. Can everyone hear me now? Okay.
Yes.
So, where was I? Chicanos por la Causa is requesting home funds as part of a leverage component of a comprehensive renovation and recapitalization strategy for the project. The property has had minimal renovations and or plant upgrades since its construction. And so our plans are to comprehensively renovate the property, including unit interiors, inclusive of appliances and cabinetry in both kitchens and bathrooms, public and common area renovations, exterior and ground updates, and structure and plant upgrades, including the roof, the HVAC system, water heaters, and most notably, the fire and nurse alarm systems for residents. In addition to these upgrades, we plan to make energy efficient and water saving upgrades recommended by our energy consultant to bring the property in line with Energy Star standards. And increase or improve the environmental as well as fiscal sustainability of the project. We estimate that the total cost of the renovation will be just under $14.2 million, or roughly $147,515 per unit. In addition to the renovation, the recapitalization will also allow the project to convert from the two current but separate PRAC agreements to a single Section 8 HAP agreement under HUD's RAD for PRAC program. The conversion to the single HAP agreement and the planned rehabilitation will contribute to the long-run financial stability of the project, preserving quality, affordable housing for low-income seniors in Tucson. We would like to thank the commission as well as city staff at HCD for their time and consideration and for all of your service to the community. Thank you.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Michael. And then, Jay, we are free to move on to El Camino Apartments.
Yeah, that sounds good. Was there a presentation associated with that first speaker that we received? I didn't see it. Maybe I just missed it in the materials that we were provided.
There was not. There was not.
Okay, great. Thanks. Yeah, next presentation then, please.
That would be, excuse me, for Casa Maria Tucson. Ernesto had said that we would be able to share the screen. Is that correct? Because I don't see that I have any capacity to be able to show the presentation.
You're a co-host, Marianne, but I'll share your material. Go ahead.
So I'm sorry, what are you saying?
You're a co-host, but I will share your material.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. So can everybody see it?
Not yet.
Okay.
Bear with me.
All right. Thank you very much. Everybody there, you did receive a copy of, actually, I don't think this is the full presentation, is it?
I'm having difficulties.
Okay. You want me to try to share now?
Yes, please.
Okay. If you want to get rid of that, I'll try that. See if it works. Okay. So can people see the screen?
Yes, we can.
Okay. So on the first page, it's just the El Camino postcard that we were able to find from a very long time ago that shows how they marketed it way back when. And underneath it is the El Camino Motel now. And I'm going to take each question that was asked of us one at a time. The first one was the total budget and the cost per unit. All in, the budget for this rehabilitation and reuse of this old motel is $4,225,500 or $211,275 per unit. So the average cost for new construction per unit is $250,000. So we are underneath that cost per unit, that average cost. But the total cost includes soft costs, such as architect fees, market study, environmental studies, as well as the purchase of the property. And something to know for everybody is that Casa Maria Tucson is investing in this project $1,090,000 toward the project. So they've already purchased the land, and they're also going to be setting up the operating reserve. So if I eliminate the acquisition costs and the operating reserve from the development budget, it is now $349,000 or $167,425 per unit, much under the $250,000 per unit average cost for new construction. The amenities in this project include a laundry room, new handicap accessible units, landscaping, an outdoor ramada, and on-site tenant services that are not part of the project we are discussing. But what's interesting is that when we did our market study, around the area. And we talked about tenant services or anything for tenants to support tenants in South Tucson. There's nothing. So we're really pleased to be able to start this kind of a model in South Tucson. And I also want to add here that Casa Maria Tucson was eligible for a developer fee on this project, just like all the other developers are. And they chose not to take it. They wanted to keep the money in the actual reconstruction of the El Camino Hotel. With regards to incorporating green and sustainable building practices and features within the subject project, first of all, this is a reuse of an existing building, two buildings actually, which when you compare to new construction is more environmentally friendly because reuse reduces the need to harvest new raw materials. The contractor will recycle much of the old material as is possible rather than using the landfill. The ceramic roof tiles will be salvaged for use and sale rather than being discarded. Solar is also included in this project. The estimator of this project is LEED certified, so the budget includes Energy Star rated or better, lighting, equipment, appliances, windows, systems, and the insulation is a higher R factor than what is used for energy rating. Irrigation is part of the project, and the landscaping to the east of the property already uses reclaimed water for its irrigation. We're going to use xeriscape landscaping, which will be integrated in and near the property by using drought-resistant plants, such as cacti, agave, and yucca that will not require watering once they are established. And Casa Maria Tucson will apply for special grants to add a rainwater harvesting system to the site. The target population are low and very low-income adults, including those with special needs whose income are at or below 60% of AMI. 30% of the units are for those with incomes below 50% of AMI, which is more than what was required in the application. With regards to the surrounding neighborhood and opportunities, can we go to the next slide, please?
That's 5 minutes. We have to end here.
Excuse me?
That's 5 minutes. We have to end here.
Was that for the setup and everything too?
No, I started the timing after you began speaking.
Oh, this was up. All right. Well, the rest of the project talks about the amenities and in the slide that you all have, as well as all my answers there, and then does discuss the opportunity score and lets you know the history of an opportunity score. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And then we are able to move on to Rincon Manor, will be the next presentation.
Okay, hi, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Ryan Labor. I'm Aspire Development. I'll share my screen, but I think, there we go. Okay. So I'll go ahead and share. I think this should work. Everyone can see that screen?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Great. Well, thanks. Thanks very much. Like I said, my name is Ryan Labor. I'm with Spire Development, and I'll be presenting our Rincon Manor project today. The project's located in southern Tucson, just west of the airport, in the Barrio Nepal neighborhood. The site is located on vacant land on South 12th Street. Here's a preliminary site plan, unit plan. We are planning on two buildings of three stories each, both with external corridors and elevators. Here's a 3D rendering and an elevation. An overview of Rincon Manor. The project will be a 9% LIHTC project. We'll be submitting to ADOH in the spring We're currently showing 78 one-bedroom, one-bathroom units. I will share that the C1 zoning on the site can support up to 36 units an acre for a total of 89 units for the total site under control. And as we continue to develop the project and work the site, we're hoping to get closer to that 89 figure. But in any case, our home request is not going to change, and we would only add sources such as AHP or the like to assist with those extra units. Rincon Manor will be age restricted to seniors 55 and up. The average income restriction will be 50% of AMI. 15% of the units are going to be reserved for tenants with rental assistance, and all those commitments will be memorialized in a deed for 35 years. We had a market study done and by a group called Vote Strategic Insights, and the PMA as shown on this map, the primary market area. Within the PMA, there are 2,941 income qualifying households that are renter households 55 and up, ages 55 and up. The rental rates that we committed to in the underwriting represent a market advantage of 23 to 67% discount versus a market rate unit of the same type. That's a good value to the market. And we have a low capture rate and low penetration rate, which indicate there's really strong demand among qualified renter households for this project in the PMA. In preparing cost estimates, we worked with a local architect called Porter Meter McDonald in Tucson to develop the site plan, and Toefield and Construction prepared cost estimates. And as a check, we compared the figures in our underwriting against past comparable 9% projects from the past year in Pima County, and found that our total development costs per unit, and tax credit requests per unit all aligned with recent trends. This project, we're going to commit to a LEED Silver certification, receiving that certification, a HERS score of 65 or lower, and all ENERGY STAR throughout. 10% of the units are going to be ultra accessible. 2% will be equipped for sensory impaired folks, and the project will feature at least a community garden, community room, leasing office, community laundry, and the unit appliances that you see there. I think one of the great strengths about Rincon Manor is the location. The project is located immediately adjacent to a bus stop, along improved sidewalks, and along a bike lane on South 12th Avenue that you can see there. The project is also in close proximity to all the amenities that are listed here, including a PCP, office, farmers market, public library, grocery, pharmacy, big employers. This map shows the location of Rincon Manor identified by the heart, and then all the amenities I just mentioned in the blue circles. The site has an opportunity score of 39, and the location of the site is immediately next to areas identified in the HAST as needing investment in affordable housing. So that concludes my presentation. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Ryan. And that brings us to Rio Azul for the next presentation.
Jason, before we proceed, who is presenting for Shasta Apartments, Cope Community Services?
I saw Jason Heise is in the attendee list. Yeah. So that would be my guess. But
thank you. Got it.
Can you guys hear me?
Okay. Thank you. Yes. Got it.
Okay. We're gonna, and Danielle is here as well.
Yeah, Danielle is going to actually run our. She's going to run our video, and I'm going to do the audio. So that's why there might be some confusion.
Well, perhaps I should go more like that. Hi. Uh-oh.
We can hear you.
Oh, good. Thank you. Shall I start?
Go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Gregory Moore. I'm the president of Southwest Nonprofit Housing. I have a video presentation that was sent to HCD. Are you able to play that at this point?
Yes, I will get that on.
Thank you.
If I can find it.
Are we going to be able to hear volume or what?
There is no voice to this video.
Okay, thank you.
And so, Mr. Moore, just so you know, we are at a little past 90 seconds into the presentation time at this point.
Oh, can you show something? Thank you. I think I should talk while the video is going on. This is a representation of a project that was just finished by Southwest Nonprofit Housing a few years ago. It's important to note, I think, that it has 2,477 solar panels, which takes care of all the electrical needs of the property. The properties that Southwest develops generally include all utilities. And we have a very, very large solar component. On the project at hand here, it's Rio Azul. It's 6 units. It's specifically set aside for 62 years and older. It's within the community revitalization area, and its budget is about $250,000 per unit, all in, which includes the solar. They're all one bedrooms, about 750 square feet, one story, large walled backyards. Amenities are really nothing except the large backyards. We have no clubhouse. All the units have washer and dryer hookups inside for the residents. The rents will be 20% of the units are at 50%, which is about $761 a month, again, which includes utilities. The 60% units are about $914. Unit, including utilities. Everything is Energy Star in the project. It comes with stove, refrigerator, microwave, dishwasher, garbage disposal are standard. We're requesting about $798,000 in home funds to complete the project. It will be finished in 2024 toward the end of the year. We're right next to a bus stop. We're within a mile of a major shopping center, food, Social Security, gas stations, everything someone would need. And again, it's about 200 feet to the nearest bus stop going each way up and down Park. It's located across from the cemetery on South Park, if any of you can visualize that. We finished in phase one environmental. The land is vacant. And we will have, in terms of landscaping, we will recapture rainwater. It is, all of the grass is artificial. You may have seen the artificial grass in the video. It really makes things look nice. No water at all, which is perfect. How much time do I have left?
About 8 seconds, sir.
Okay. Well, I thank the commission for listening. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. The next presentation is from Shasta Apartments.
Hey, Jason. Just want to make sure that we can share our screen before we get going on the clock, if that's okay.
Yeah,
you have co-host capability, so is Daniela.
Are you going to share it, or are we going to?
Can you share it?
Daniela can share it, yeah.
So I don't think we have access.
I don't think we have access for her to share.
All right, hang on.
Make that happen for us before we get started.
Perfect.
Great. Are we good?
I'm not in charge of the file, though. I can't control it.
Jason, we can't control the...
I think someone...
I can scroll. Is that what you're asking, Jason?
Perfect. Yeah, just cue him to scroll for you because
I can scroll.
Okay, well, we're not necessarily going in that order. We're just going to show that as I talk. So are you sure you can't get control of it, D? Okay. All right. We'll roll. Ready? Okay. My name is Jason Heisey, and I'm the representative for Cope Community Services, who is developing the Shasta Apartments. The property is 1.92 acres at the southeast corner of Prince and Fairview. It's zone C2. It's currently outside of the 100-year floodplain. During the due diligence on this property, Cope Community Services did an ALTA survey, appraisal, drainage report in phase one with no RECs. Site utilities are all to the site, TEP, Southwest Gas, and Tucson Water. The project is currently suitable for development. To the questions that were sent to us, the total budget for this project is $26.9 million, about $336,000 per unit. We're going to leverage about $21.5 million of 9% credits. We're asking for $500,000 of home funds, a $3.2 million perm loan, $706,000 of deferred developer fee. Our green building components are standard for the 2024 QAP mandatory design guidelines. We're going to be LEED silver, Energy Star appliances, low flow fixtures, mandatory HERS rating of 65. Pretty standard stuff with the current QAP. Our target population is 80 affordable elderly units. It's about a 70,000 square foot structure, 55 and older, 40 to 60% of the area median income, with the average 50% as is required by the QAP. Typical single occupant will make about $24,000 or less. We're going to have 77 one bedrooms, three studios. The rent minus utilities is going to be between $700 and $854. Unit sizes for the one bedrooms are 643 square feet. For the studios are 440 square feet. We're also going to have a 3,000 square foot community center. We are going to apply for 24 project based Section 8 vouchers. Cope Community Services, who is the developer, has been a behavioral health provider in Tucson for the last 50 years. They have about 12,600 clients, 360 employees, annual budget of about $45 million. They've been in the affordable housing space since the early 2000s. They're currently developing the Cascade Apartments, which is a similar project, 70 units, one bedroom for 55 and older at the corner of Drachman and Stone. They would provide the services. We would have a disability preference. We'd have a resident service coordinator who'd be on site 40 hours a month. Our surrounding neighborhood, we're right at the corner of Prince and Fairview. The Shasta apartments are located in the Norte Sewer Strategic Plan Area, part of the City of Tucson's Transit-Oriented Design Federal Transit Grant. The Shasta apartments directly support the City of Tucson HAST initiative to revitalize the corridor from Tucson Mall to downtown. We are within a quarter mile of a pharmacy, the Walgreens down the street, a grocery store, the El Heredero supermarket across the street, the parks and open space, Jacobs Park right down the street on North Fairview, a bank, Wells Fargo, across the street at 1260 West Prince, General Shopping, Family Dollar, and Super Target. We have recreation nearby, Jacobs YMCA at 1010 West Lind, and we're right down the street from the El Rio Neighborhood Center across Oracle. Our opportunity score is 43. Our community score is 93. Our health and safety score was 19. Our mobility score was 40. Our social economic score was 33. Final points of the Shasta apartments support many of the peak CHIP and HAST objectives. The Shasta apartments will increase the affordable housing stock by adding 80 additional units. The Shasta apartments will ensure stable, healthy, and safe housing. The Shasta apartments will increase equitable housing by following all fair housing laws. Obviously, the Shasta apartments will focus on the most vulnerable in Tucson, the elderly and the cost burdened. And the Shasta apartments will service a portion of the 75,000 households in the City of Tucson that are defined as housing cost burdened. The Shasta apartments will create a partnership with the City of Tucson and a local nonprofit. And finally, the Shasta apartments will facilitate affordable housing in an area of opportunity. If you want to roll up on that screen, they can see the renderings. There's the site. We are in the green here. That, or the yellow, is our first phase right there. This is a three-phased project. If you roll down a little bit, keep going down. And again, you'll see the renderings and the elevations and the floor plans. Again, that's the floor plans. One more. That's a typical unit. That's the community center.
5 seconds.
That's the elevations. Keep going. You get to a rendering. Rendering looks cool. There you go. Yeah. All right. We got through it. All right. Thanks.
Thank you, Jason and Daniela. And that brings us to our final presentation for the evening from the Home and State and Local Fiscal Recovery Fund applicants, which is the Tucson House by Gorman & Company.
Good afternoon, everybody. Can you hear me? Okay. And I've got a disabled participant screen sharing.
Sally, you should have co-hosts.
Okay. Can everybody see that?
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. All right, thank you everybody for your time this afternoon. I'm Sally Schwen. I'm the Arizona Market President for Gorman & Company. Gorman & Company is the housing implementation entity for the City of Tucson Choice Neighborhoods redevelopment of the Thrive in the 05 projects. In July of this year, the City of Tucson was awarded $50 million of a Choice Neighborhoods Implementation grant from HUD, which is among the largest HUD CNI grants that's ever been awarded, when it was been $50 million to 8 other cities in the country. Of the $50 million awarded, $28 million will be going to housing for the Thrive in the 05 area. And there will be a total of 4 projects developed as part of that effort. The anchor project is the Tucson House, which currently is a 408-unit public housing tower at the location of North Oracle Road, just south of Speedway. Hard to miss it. Everybody must know where that one is. the importance of this rehab is to preserve the amazing historic aspects of the project. The projects will be receiving 4% low-income housing tax credits and about $24 million of historic tax credits. The cost of the replacement is excessive in this building. It was built in 1963, so being 6 years old, there's significant need of rehab, including the replacement of all the infrastructure and a complete remodeling of all units and transformation of all the dilapidated and obsolete community areas. All mechanical, electrical, and plumbing systems will be replaced, including the obsolete elevators and sewer pipes, reconstruction of building components, extensive restoration of the slabs, and reinforcement of cracked flooring in the first and 17th floors. The total construction cost is approximately $178 million. That will equate to a cost per unit of just under $500,000. With that, it should be noted that of the 408 units, we will be reconfiguring that unit mix to 360 units. We'll be combining a number of the current studio units into 1 and 2 bedrooms to create a more efficient use and livability for the residents that are there currently. The project is the largest concentration of public housing in the city of Tucson. And through this effort, we will be able to expand a great deal of the community space to allow for approximately 16,000 square feet of community space for amenities and approximately 8,500 square feet for supportive services for the city of Tucson. The building entry is going to be redesigned based on SEPTEB principles to facilitate additional safety for all the building occupants while maintaining a warm and welcoming environment for non-residents who are accessing services and visiting. So due to the lack in the age of the amenity space, the unit mix will be changed to 60 studios, 271 bedrooms, and 32 bedroom units. Scoot down. Sorry, I'm kind of scrolling through this and reading at the same time. Here's the slide on the box. So part of this phasing plan, given the fact of the tower, we'll be doing a approximate rehab on 4 floors at a time, starting from the top and going down. We're currently working on our relocation plan. We've got a summary there of the financial structure that I touched on real briefly, but I know I have limited time. And then we're currently have gone to the city with our pre-op meeting and the current stages of excessive due diligence on the building, on all systems with civil, structural, et cetera, there, and environmental reports. So part of the green and sustainable building practice will incorporate enterprise green in communities into this redevelopment. As I mentioned, the property will be receiving historic property, federal historic tax credits, and all the mechanical, plumbing, and electrical systems will be placed with Energy Star appliances, low-flow plumbing fixtures. There'll be higher than normal ADA units, and type A and type B, so we can always convert type A accessibility to type B later on. I'm going to turn this to you really quick. I'm trying to talk fast. The target population is going to be 55 and older, which is a very currently is what the vast amount of the residents are. The surrounding neighborhood will certainly serve those folks with as it's got the location for all the transit oriented uses. The future.
5 seconds.
5 seconds?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, go, Sarah.
I was just going to touch on our opportunity score. So our opportunity score was a total of 47. We had a high community score of 90 and a health and safety score of 3. As we bring major investment into areas, we believe it's important to focus on affordability in our reinvestment corridors. So Tucson House is a very vital element of this, considering the average income of Tucson House is about $11,000. So that's it.
Thank you.
Thanks. Goes really fast. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much. And Jay, that completes the presentations.
Okay, thanks everybody for the presentations. I believe at this point, We can bring Jim and Marianne back in, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Jim, are you still on to lead us from here?
I am. Okay, that was a great presentations. I'd like to thank all of the presenters. It's exciting to see some of these projects and the potential of what can be coming to Tucson. So again, just like to thank the presenters. Mindy, you have a question for the group?
I do. Actually, I have two questions, but predominantly, I want to re-clarify what am I scoring on today, not necessarily anything but my impression of the presentation.
So the four criteria that we reviewed in that the presentation prior and that are at the top of the scoring form, raising those four evaluation criteria, those were the four items that we asked the presenters to present on. And so you're scoring on your impression of of each project's potential community impact based on the presentation they provided related to those four items.
Just to be clear, for me.
Absolutely.
I see the criteria, and my scoring is going to be based on how they hit each of those criterias and how they presented their...
The quality of the project from your impression based on the responses to the four criteria. And then overall, each project is being scored on a much longer list of criteria by a full review panel that's reviewing total applications, all of that, the pro formas, et cetera. We just knew that wouldn't be something the commission would have time and capacity to do. So wanted to include this opportunity for direct input into the scoring from the commission.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Okay, as a quick reminder to the commissioners in the chat, there's the link that that shows you the scoring, the evaluation criteria, and gives you the place to enter your scores. So any final comments or questions before we move to agenda item number 5? Okay, thank you, Jason. Appreciate that. So agenda item number 5 is is going to be with our facilitators to talk about the results of the survey, which was done a couple weeks ago. So Colleen and Tani, you've got the floor.
Okay, good evening, everybody. Thank you so much. It's nice to be back with you. Thanks for the opportunity again to be part of your meeting, and Happy New Year. I'm here tonight on behalf of myself and my colleague, Tani, who is not with us. And again, for those who weren't here last time or guests, we're with Southwest Decision Resources. We're a neutral facilitation and collaboration firm based here in Tucson, and we've been working with the commission to help prepare for the upcoming retreat on February 2nd. So as part of that preparation, we shared out a survey before the end of the year, and thanks very much to those of you who did complete the survey. Looks like I've got screen share capacity, so let me just pull this up and make sure that you all can actually see my screen. Are you able to see?
Yes.
Great. Okay. So I'm going to present tonight kind of a high level summary of the results. We are the survey, we ended up extending the deadline a little, which made sense because it was the holidays and everyone's busy. So we did get the final results, the last ones in by the 29th. And so we are still going through kind of in more detail a number of the kind of open-ended questions and trying to synthesize all that for you. But we do have many of the results here for you tonight. And then we will be sharing with all the commissioners a fuller synthesis, written synthesis of this over email at the beginning of next week. But here we go. We did hear from 11 people. 9 of you were the voting members, and then 2 non-voting members responded. You can see how it broke down in terms of participation by subcommittee members as well there. So one of the first questions was how effective people felt that the commission was overall. And for this and all subsequent graphs that we're going to show, we're going to kind of go from the left-hand side of your screen being the low score, the right-hand side being the higher score. So this is a scale of 1 to 4, where 1 is very ineffective and 4 is very effective. So we can see that for that one, no one scored it very ineffective or effective. Most of the majority of the scores being slightly toward the more ineffective side. Mission relevance. So your existing mission has that three-part ABC, which we also asked for feedback on. Everyone who responded does feel it is still relevant, which is really good news. A couple folks felt it doesn't even need revising, but the majority of folks felt that it's relevant and does still need some revision, some tweaking. So that's a good place of strength to be starting from. Sorry. Okay. So then we have the three components of your mission, and we wanted to get feedback on all three of those as well. So the first one, develop and preserve affordability for all Tucsonans, including renters, homeowners, and those without housing. So again, from the left-hand side of your screen, how well are you progressing? 1 being very poorly, to the right-hand, 4 progressing very well. So falling right in the middle there, tending a little bit more to very poorly, but still a fair number of folks. These are going up to number of people who responded. So we had 6 people responding with a 2, slightly more toward the poorly side, and 5 people responding slightly more toward the very well side. The second part of the mission, protect barrios and communities from rapid change and displacement, as well as structural disinvestment. Oh, sorry about that typo. A little bit trending more toward the poorly or not as well side of the spectrum on this part of your mission. And then the last component of your mission, cultivate landlords and developers as partners in providing equitable, accessible, and quality housing. Kind of a smattering here of a couple more folks feeling that you're doing a little better on this one, but still trending a little more toward the poorly. So then we asked about relationships, and we asked how you all would characterize the relationship between the CEHD and then a number of entities. So again, going from the left-hand side of your screen, one, the furthest is an unsure. We included unsure in this category, so that's what this is. And then 1, very poor or weak in terms of the relationship, and 4, very good or strong in terms of the relationship. So this first one is looking at housing and community development, the relationship with them. And you can see that a fair number of folks, 1 person unsure, but mostly feeling good and strong about that relationship. The relationship with development services was more smattered with a few more people toward the poorer side of the spectrum. The relationship with the Office of Equity, I think notable here is just how many folks were unsure, and that may just be an indication of the fact that that office is newer and you haven't had as much interaction with them. That's for you to interpret. And then mayor and council, kind of a broad spectrum here. No one really feeling that that relationship is very good or strong, but some folks falling all over. So that's interesting that there's not real consensus on that one. So this is kind of looking at all of them together, upper left-hand corner, housing and community development, mayor and council on the top right, Office of Equity in the bottom, and development services on the bottom right. And I think you can just see again, the relationship you're feeling the most comfortable and feeling the most strong about is that relationship with housing and community development. Office of Equity seems rather unclear. And then I think mayor and council and development services, you guys are kind of all over the map on how that relationship is going. We then asked about roles and responsibilities of the different entities as they relate to the work of the CEHD. So again, 1, I'm not clear at all about the roles and responsibilities. four, I'm very clear about the roles and responsibilities. So first, about the CHD itself, how do you feel you understand the roles and responsibilities of the commission? And you can see the responses here. Then we asked about the subcommittees in particular. This mirrors very closely the clarity that people have about the commission overall. In terms of roles and responsibilities of HCD, you can see how that falls out here. And then development services may be trending a little bit more toward lack of clarity on this one, but again, a real smattering amongst commissioners about the clarity here. Mayor and council, the same thing, a real smattering. So we then asked about the challenges and opportunities that you all see moving forward. And again, these are just kind of some highlights that we're starting to see as we go through this synthesis, and you're gonna get the fuller responses in the written report that we'll send to you early next week. But just wanted to share with you some of the things we're starting to see. Challenges, lack of tangible responsibilities, lack of clarity on roles and responsibilities. This is coming through again and again, and we've heard it from talking to some of the subcommittees. A feeling that maybe you're not making as much of a difference as you could, perhaps that the structure of the commission is maybe too formal or not flexible enough. Some of the opportunities that you have identified are to have a better role and responsibilities, obviously. Looking for more guidance from mayor and council in terms of what your role and what your contribution can be. There is mention of pursuing an opportunity of getting a housing bond measure on the ballot. And then kind of generally more integration with and awareness of the city's programs and needs in your own work program. The strengths, we asked what are the strengths, what's going well, and it's you, the commissioners. Folks feel that you have a great diversity of expertise and dedication and people who really care about the issues and the topics. So there was good consensus on that. You all feel that the commissioners are strong, so that's great. Priorities, we asked about what you feel are priorities for the commission moving forward. And these responses are kind of falling out into more like process priorities and more content priorities. So process-wise, again, defining those roles, getting those clearly tangible responsibilities and roles, a sense that maybe you could find some ways to get some more input and engagement with the community and more engagement with mayor and council. On the content side, again, hearing about the desire to go for that housing bond on the ballot, focusing on all these things which are reflective of your mission, affordable housing, ways to measure housing equity, housing stability, mixed income housing, and homelessness. So these are some of the content priorities that are rising to the top and are probably not a surprise for you. So in terms of the retreat, we asked what you felt would make it most valuable for you. And we do want to hear more on this tonight if there's time. I don't know where you're at in your agenda, but clearer direction on those roles and responsibilities and your goals. You want to come out of it with some actionable outcomes. You want that shared understanding of what you're doing. A number of folks really emphasizing that you really want to get to know your fellow commissioners better. And so some aspect of team building and getting to know each other. And then there was a suggestion that it could be beneficial to have for you all to have done some homework beforehand. The suggestion was, let's come with some real possibilities of things we could do to discuss, not just ideas. Not knowing what those who suggested that had in mind, I would look to you for that. I don't know if you would be thinking, for example, the housing bond measure was mentioned multiple times. Is that something that you all would like to organize to do a little bit of research into, to come with maybe how that's rolled out in other places so that you could talk a little bit more tangibly about what that might look like? That's really for you all to discuss and decide if you think there are any particular areas that you would like to assign to yourselves to do some homework on before and come with more information. So, and this is my last slide, then next steps from us are, we'll send you that full synthesis of those survey results early next week. Again, the survey is anonymous, and you know, anything that might inadvertently reveal the identity of someone that will be removed, of course, and so you'll see the results completely anonymously. We have met only with one of the subcommittees, so we do still need to meet with the other two subcommittees, Housing First and Affordable Housing, before the retreat. And then we will get you all as commissioners a draft agenda for your feedback, a draft retreat agenda by the 19th of January. And then by 1 week out minimum, we'll get you that final retreat agenda. So that's the end of my presentation. I look to you, Jim. I don't know where you're at with time and if we have time for some reflection or questions or feedback on retreat outcomes, or if you need to move on.
No, I think that was great. Can you, is it possible to email out those results?
Yeah.
To the group?
Yeah. So I can email you the presentation I just gave, but what we're going to send you at the beginning of the week is a full report of those results that'll have a lot more detail in it.
Yeah, no, there's some things in there that definitely caught my attention. And I think
I'm sure you're not alone.
Good process that we're going through here. So I'd like to open it up for comments and questions. Marianne?
Yeah, I was just going to say that we gave 30 minutes for this part of the agenda, and she didn't use near that much. So I think there's time for discussion.
That's great. Yeah, I just didn't know if you were running over or where you were at.
We're doing okay. We've got about 40 minutes left. Let's see here, 10. Yeah, there's probably 20 to 30 minutes left of agenda items, I think. So we've got a little bit of time if we need it.
Okay. Well, I would love to hear from you all. It's a lot to digest, so you might not have any feedback on the actual results yet. Although if anything did jump out that you want to raise or reflect on, that would be great. But particularly in terms of retreat outcomes, if there's anything that you would like to stress, what you would really like to get out of the retreat, particularly based on what you've just seen. Marianne?
Is there an opportunity to be able to talk one-on-one? With you prior to the retreat?
Yes. Yeah. If anyone feels that would be valuable, let us know and we can do that.
Is there a number that we can call or some way to?
I will put my contact information in the chat. Can I give that to everyone? Yes. Yep. Anyone else while I'm doing that? Jay?
Yeah, thanks for getting that survey together and sharing at least the preliminary results. I don't have anything real earth-shattering to say, but it does seem to reflect, I think, a lot of the things that we've been discussing as commissioners. So nothing really jumped out to me where I was like, oh, that was unexpected, or, you know, that seemed to come out of left field. So it makes me feel like we're at least kind of on the right track as a group in terms of, you know, the things that we're wanting to potentially address in the upcoming retreat. So, yeah, looking forward to getting together with everybody at the retreat and making some headway.
Thanks, Jay. Anyone else? Reflection or any guidance or recommendations for the retreat from your point of view? I did put my email in the chat. You're free to reach out if you would like a one-on-one conversation, as Marianne suggested, or if you just want to share something over email that you don't feel like bringing to the group right now, that's great. Neto?
Just a couple of items related to the retreat. One, Colleen indicated she would like to meet with the Affordable Housing Subcommittee. The regular scheduled meeting is the 17th, but she and Tony are not available. So the Affordable Housing Subcommittee should, if it possible, make a decision this afternoon about when to reschedule. And also, you'll note on the calendar that February 1 is your regular scheduled commission meeting, followed by the retreat on the following day. So the commission may choose to, just suggesting, you may want to cancel your February 1 meeting.
Thanks, Neto.
Mm-hmm.
Marianne?
Yeah, I agree with canceling the February 1 meeting. And then I can meet a different day, like on a Thursday on the 11th or the 25th for the, oh, I can't do the 25th, the 11th. Which is next week, or the 16th for the Affordable Housing Subcommittee, if that works for the rest of the subcommittee.
Thanks for throwing that out there, Marianne.
Let's see. So the 16th doesn't work for me, but the 11th would. Kenny, I don't remember who else was on the subcommittee.
Oh, I'm sorry. I lied about the 11th. I'll be in Phoenix. I'm so sorry.
I would be able to do the 16th. And with the scheduling for this coming term, I was going to reach out about seeing if Tuesdays generally might work for others.
I have the 23rd open, which is a Tuesday.
What about the 24th, which is a Wednesday? Tuesdays aren't good for me.
I apologize, but we facilitate another city council, the Complete Streets Council, on that Wednesday, the 24th, that evening.
Right. How about the 15th, the Monday, the 15th, the 22nd? Is it one? Or we could do even the 8th.
So the 15th works, or the 22nd will not. I'll be in Eloy.
Mark, does that work? Is the 15th good for you?
The 15th works for me, Maggie.
Maggie, okay. Kenny?
And that would be at 4 p.m., correct? And Jim, would you all have other agenda items, or would retreat be the only agenda item?
We do have another agenda item that we need to discuss.
Okay. Just wondering.
One just logistical, it is MLK Day, the 15th.
Is that a city holiday now?
It is a city holiday, and that doesn't mean you can't meet, but just for awareness sake, please know.
It's a federal holiday.
So does that mean that we won't be able to do it through the Zoom? Mm-hmm. That's set up? We'd have to set up a separate Zoom?
If you all decide we can still set up the Zoom, we'll make it work.
Okay.
Well, how about the 22nd then, the following Monday?
I'm in Eloy. I can't.
Okay. All right. Let's do a doodle poll. Take this offline.
Wait a second, Jim. Sorry. My hands. I was going to say I would like to see the commission meet before the retreat. However, hearing this conversation, perhaps the affordable housing can meet during the retreat, during our scheduled commission time. Since it's on everybody's calendar already.
Colleen, is that enough time for you?
It's the day before the retreat.
Yeah.
It's pretty tight.
Never mind.
But if that, we can definitely make that work if that's what works. It just wouldn't really give time to make any big changes to the agenda if that needed to be done based on that conversation.
All right. Well, I'll work with Neto. Neto, you have Doodle, right? Doodle polls?
Yes.
Okay. We'll do a Doodle poll tomorrow to the housing subcommittee members and see if we can come up with a good time for everybody. That'll work.
Should we also include Colleen? Since yes. There's yes. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks. And I had sent you Neto our availability. I apologize about that. The 17th is another big city community forum meeting for the general plan revision that we're leading. So we have to be at that.
Yeah, I mean, the other problem with trying to decide here is we have ex officio members who are not here at this meeting, who are typically part of the Affordable Housing Subcommittee.
Totally.
Okay. Any other comments or thoughts on the retreat before we move to the next agenda item? All right. Thank you, Colleen. We appreciate the presentation.
Thank you all very much. Looking forward to it.
Okay. We're on agenda item number 6, discussion of defining housing equity and scheduling. Commission meeting with Laurice Walker, the City of Tucson Chief Equity Officer. So who from HCD is running this?
I believe Allison's going to.
Yeah, I think I can do a quick and put my camera's not working.
Ray is an attendee. Can we add her as a panelist again? Sorry.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Allison. Thank you.
So this is just kind of a follow-up to the discussion last month. You guys had a presentation, kind of just an update about the Tucson Equity Data Strategy, about the Poverty and Urban Stress Report, and kind of, you know, there've been questions from commission members about how will tools like this be used to track and define and understand housing equity. And in conversation with Laurice Walker, our chief equity officer, the first thing is defining what we mean by housing equity. She offered to kind of facilitate a conversation with the commission on defining what we mean by housing equity and using that to help define what are the metrics and outcomes that we want to track collectively over time. So I think, right, sort of presented that as a question at last month's meeting, especially given the context of having the retreat coming up and looking for direction from the commission about when and how you want to have that conversation. Laurice would like to do a 90-minute in-person conversation. So that's a lot to like add to a commission meeting. I think a couple options are using a commission meeting time, using like the housing desegregation subcommittee time, and then inviting any commission members who are interested to join that conversation. Really just looking for some, seems like an interest of the commission and looking for direction on kind of how you'd like to move forward with that.
I'll just jump in real quick. I think obviously we've talked about this quite a bit as a commission, needing to get a better handle on how we're defining housing equity and kind of how that plays into the work we're doing as a commission. So I welcome the conversation. But, you know, seeing as it's a potentially 90-minute, you know, conversation that, you know, may or may not be part of our normal commission meetings, I think it would be really helpful, again, to have some understanding about what the meeting would look like. You know, is it facilitated? Is she coming with questions? What's kind of the expectation? You know, just kind of what the meeting is going to look like. Is there an agenda, that kind of thing, so that we can maybe better understand how to incorporate that into our work as a commission and scheduling and whatnot.
Yep. So she would like her plan would be to facilitate it for us, for the commission. So she would be the facilitator, and really, my understanding is the idea to really spend some time diving into the definition. And what commission members want to get out of that. And, you know, I think as we see here, right? Kind of needing more in-depth time to have that conversation is what she was hoping for.
Marianne.
I think it's well worth it to make half of the meeting of a commission meeting just for this topic. and I think it'll be educational. I think it'll be good for the Housing Commission. I think it'll be good for that diversity or equity committee. So I just think we should make a commitment to devoting a half of one of our meetings to this topic.
Okay. Tisha?
Thank you, Jim. I would be present whether it's in a subcommittee or full commission meeting, but saying that, I think it should be a part of the full commission meeting. Equity is in our title, and I certainly feel like it should be priority for the commission as a whole.
Thank you. Ray?
I agree. I'd like to see that at a full commission meeting. And if it's in person and it's a 90-minute presentation of do just 30 minutes for the things that we need to have happen at a meeting and the like basic logistics, and then have the rest of the meeting be focused on that.
Okay. When are we thinking about doing this presentation? Would it be in March?
That's up to the commission. One option is to use that February 1st time for that conversation so that we're not messing up with, Colleen's schedule,
really,
but
yeah.
Still, and just wanted to also reiterate, like, right, the idea is to have that in person. Just making sure everyone's comfortable with that as well.
Okay. Jay?
I was just going to say, I think what Marianne said, I think it would be great to do it the February meeting before we have our retreat. I think that's a great idea because, you know, that's the basis of what we're trying to do. I think it'll help the retreat a lot. And plus, you know, if we don't use all of the time or even, you know, take the whole 2 hours, it would be good to potentially do some pre-retreat touching base about expectations and when to get there and just some logistics so that we don't show up super cold. So maybe we could do that as well.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Allison, are you going to be on point, or who would be on point for actually doing this presentation then?
So I can schedule. Larice Walker would be facilitating the conversation.
Okay. And
I can ask her for kind of an agenda, a few kind of points on what folks should expect and maybe what she'd be asking for preparation ahead of time. Sure I get you guys.
I think maybe
some info.
Maybe we have an offline conversation with Jay and I just to kind of talk through, you know, what the presentation is, the agenda, make sure it's relevant and focused on housing.
Yep, sounds good.
Okay, that sounds good. Any other comments or questions on agenda item number 6?
Yes. So did we just agree that the February 1st? Okay.
Yeah,
I just wanted to make sure.
I was going to just recap that on agenda item number 11, but that's what I was thinking.
Okay.
Ray?
And if I understood your point, Jay, correctly, of doing it in the same place as we're doing the retreat, is that right? So people are...
I didn't make that point, but that's a great point.
I think it'd be nice to just, you know, there's so many like finding the space and getting comfortable with it, and to just cut down on that from the retreat time and really making the most of that retreat time. Could be another benefit of doing something right the day before.
I would love to do in-person commission meetings. I think we'd be much more efficient as a group if we did that.
I simply have to find out if the space is available on February 1. We are reserved. The commission is reserved for February 2. Just have to find out if it's available February 1.
Okay.
Can someone say where the February 2nd retreat is?
Here at the campus at 310 Commerce Loop, HCD office.
It's just a little bit north of the Mercado, west of the freeway. Okay. Anything else on agenda item 6? Okay, agenda item number 7, follow-up on mayor and council recommendations. The only thing I really wanted to talk about, Marianne, if you got some other stuff you want to go through, I think that's great. But there was an ask from the mayor, and I think the top priority was for us to do a better job working with the county and the county's Affordable Housing Commission specifically. And I was really hoping Marcos would be here today, but he's not. But I think our next step is to try to set up maybe a joint commission meeting between the two at some point this year. And talk about, you know, making sure that our goals are aligned and understanding how we can work together better. And then I think the real thing that the mayor asked of us was to work with the county on a bond initiative. So she did not want that to be a city focused initiative, but something at the that was driven at the county level with our input. And so I think we need to begin those conversations.
Yeah, I agree. And if we do meet with have the joint meeting, that it should be in person with the county commission.
Yeah, I did get an email today that Marcos is out of the office, but I will email him after this and see if we can maybe get something put together. Sarah?
Yeah, I sit on the county commission as well. So happy to help facilitate that connection. And the county commission typically meets in person, but they do have a hybrid option. And they usually meet up at the Natural Resource Park up off of River and kind of before it turns into whatever road it turned, La Cholla maybe, is that it? So anyway, so definitely happy to help kind of coordinate that between the county commission. Marcos isn't in charge of the commission, but I could get us Neto in touch with the staff liaison for the county.
When does that commission meet?
It typically meets on Friday mornings. And let me
at 8 o'clock, right?
It's 8:30. And I think it's the third Friday of the month that it typically happens on.
Are those also 2-hour meetings?
They are 2-hour meetings, yes. It goes from 8:30 to 10:30.
Okay.
And Mark is also on that commission.
If you guys could kind of help us connect the two groups, and let's just get something at some point this year on our calendars for, I think, a joint meeting. And we probably need to have flush that out a little bit better first. Marianne?
I'm good.
You're good. Okay. Anything else on agenda item number 7? Okay, agenda item number 8 is a clarification on the use of repayment of home loans and the interest gained on them. And Marianne, this one's yours.
Yeah, I asked if at this meeting the city could just do a brief or excuse me, pretty detailed actually of you know, the home loans that are paid back and the interest gained, how they're being used.
Sure. So I'm happy to field that, Marianne. For the commission, when we invest in rental housing projects in particular, we do so as low rate interest loans. They're usually about 2.5% are those loans with a deferred repayment period. When developers are cash flow positive and are able to be making those repayments, the funds that are repaid, both the principal and the interest, is treated as program income under federal rules, which means that we have to use it for purposes that are eligible under the home program. Each year, it may look a little different into how we reinvest in which home-specific activities. In the current year, we had about $600,000 between the city and the county in our consortium that was earned or recovered in program income, most of which from rental housing development, but also from some other sources. And so we were able to use that funding to fund down payment assistance this year, which meant that we didn't put new home dollars into down payment assistance this year. We only used program income, which allowed us to put a little over $600,000 additional into our rental housing development RFP this year. So that's the way it was used this year. It can change over time, sort of based on where there's the greatest need. Our focus over the last couple of years has really been driving as much funding into those rental housing development requests for proposals as we can, because we know that the QAP is really is positioned in a way that the developers need that investment from local government in order to compete well for LIHTC projects. And so that's really been kind of the drive over the last few years with any additional income. I know one of the questions that came up at the last commission meeting was, could that program income be put into a housing trust fund? And so there are some challenges that come with that. The first is the way the federal program works. Program income has to be expended before you can expend any new federal funds through the home program. So each year we can kind of collect our program income until the end of the fiscal year. But then come July 1, we have to obligate our program income before we can touch any of our new home money. So it becomes challenging to put it into a housing trust fund where you may want the money to appreciate, et cetera, and may not be operating on the same timeline as home investments. The other challenge that can be that could occur in trying to put home funds into a housing trust fund is that when we think about a housing trust fund, I think generally people are thinking about more expansive housing opportunities than what the home program can support. So the home program really limited to very low income folks. And when we think about using housing trust fund dollars, we might be thinking about what's sort of referred to as workforce housing or, other housing models, more mixed income housing, things like that, that wouldn't fully work with home. And so having these funds with more restriction set inside the housing trust fund could really create some challenges for tracking and really making sure that those federal dollars are used for federally eligible purposes. It's not to say that that's not something that can be explored or something that could potentially, there may be a viable solution to do that. I don't want to suggest there isn't, but immediately what comes to mind are those kind of two challenge areas about trying to invest in the housing trust fund versus continuing to reobligate into our annual home allocations. So I'm happy to field any other questions about that. But that's kind of the general overview of how those funds are used.
That's a great overview. Thank you so much. And how many times do the same funds have to recycle before they become like
eternally?
You're laughing and Anne's laughing. So am I asking?
It's HUD. They are never letting go, right?
Oh, seriously.
So the program income is program income. It's not sort of when you wash through once, that dollar is now clean and can be deobligated from federal rules. In some programs you can do that. It's called defederalizing the funds. In this case, like, there's no way to defederalize a home fund. Our program income always has to be reinvested in the purposes of the home program, which, you know, creates a challenge when we're trying to do something creative like this. But if we think about the overarching principle behind it, it's that every dollar given in home and every dollar earned through a dollar given in home is invested back into affordable housing.
Okay, so here's the last argument I'd try then with HUD, which would be these would be dollars to leverage other federal funds once they've recycled once or twice. Do you think they'd even buy that?
The program income rules are regulatory, so it would require a change to regulation. Like HUD, a field office wouldn't be able to say, hey, that's a great idea, let's waive it. I think what we can do, and I'm happy to commit to doing, is having a conversation with our field office to see, are there other communities that are putting home funds as part of a housing trust fund, and how are they doing that? Because I don't want to suggest that it's impossible, but just that there are certainly some challenge areas, and it would be, it would be walking a narrow path of compliance. And so seeing if there are folks who are successfully walking that narrow path, then we certainly want to learn about that.
Yeah, we certainly don't want to take the initial home funds, the initial awarded funds, and put them in the housing trust fund. You want to put those out, but I mean, even considering for city projects, if the city, instead of going for original initial, home funds, could use that money just for its projects instead, that still fits the home guideline, right? So like that $600,000 going to the city's nonprofit development projects, then there would be more money left in the initial round for people to be able to compete for. And so you'd set aside like that $600,000, which would have put then more money back into the initial round of home funds for this round of applications. It's just an idea. I think, now that the city's got its nonprofit and it's going to be competing for, the same funds as other developers, if you're able to do something like that, that would be a good use of that, loan payment payback and the interest rate. I just think it's just an idea to consider.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, any other comments or questions on agenda item number 8? Okay, agenda item number 9, HCD update. Anne, are you doing that?
Yeah, I just have a few updates I want to make sure commissioners know. Again, Happy New Year, all. Good to see you. Things. Next week is a mayor and council meeting, and we will be doing what's now become our annual housing affordability strategy for Tucson update. So mayor and council adopted the HAST plan in December 2022. And so we went back to mayor and council December last year to give an update on progress towards implementing that plan. And we'll be doing that again next week. So looking forward to having a conversation with mayor and council about that. I feel like as I was preparing the materials, really encouraged in terms of the progress we've made, and also recognize, given the need in the community, really also have a ways to go as well. So that's sort of the sentiment there in terms of what we'll be talking about. The other thing to make sure at mayor and council next week, it's a back-to-back past item, and then the next item is an update on the prosperity initiatives. So Bonnie Bazzotto came and talked to you all with Chief Bentley before about the specific housing items. Reminder, Prosperity Initiative is about how the region can help address poverty. And so just to know that the Pima County recently adopted the framework that the Prosperity Initiative Group has put together, and that's what will be presented and go before mayor and council next week. Happy to answer any questions on either of those two items that will go to mayor and council. One other update, I'm really excited. Oh, wait, before I give the other updates, I do see hands. So Mark, did you have a question on that?
Are you going to share your report out with the commission as all? So
update, sure. I'm happy to share them. Actually, they're public right now on the, so we can share a link and share information on that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Neto, did you have?
Not to steal your thunder in case you were going to mention, but commissioners, I will send you an invitation to the January 19th open house. City of Tucson HCD has been refurbishing existing affordable housing apartments, and they are soon to be open at 5th and Dodge. And we're going to have an open house, public open house, on January 19th, Friday, starting at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. No ice cream will be served because it's going to be really cold, probably. But anyway, I'll send you an invitation. Hope you can join us.
And when Neto sends, thank you, Neto. That's a good reminder. When he sends, please, if you do plan on attending, please let us know just so we can manage quorum if there will be more commissioners. But really excited about that project. It's off the top of my head, 29. Apartments.
Close, 28.
Okay. And really excited to get that back in circulation and get that housing out there. Couple other updates. One exciting one, I think, in recognizing all of the work that is on our plate, the city manager recently assigned a new deputy director to HCD. So for now, we are going to have three deputy directors. You all know Jason has been a deputy director, Terry Galligan, but for now, he has assigned Johanna Hernandez to our department to help with a bunch of the initiatives we have going on. And one of the areas that Johanna is going to help oversee is the development arm and working with Sarah, really trying to make sure we're moving all those projects. So something I'm really excited about. Last thing I'll say is, as the ex officio, I'm mindful of vacancies on the commission, and the one vacancy that HCD appoints that's vacant is the youth seat. So just a reminder, if you do know youth, right now the age as written in the ordinance is 18 to 24. So somebody who can represent youth ages 18 to 24, really looking to try to fill that seat. So those are my updates. Jim, did you have a question on that?
I have just a quick question on the HAST plan. Are there any significant changes that were made to the HAST plan this year, or is it basically
just
what we've seen before?
No, and good question. In March, so we gave an update last December. In March, we went to Mayor and Council and did ask for some minor updates, mostly kind of correcting things, updating things that had changed. The one slightly more significant change we asked for in March was adding the Thrive 29th Street zone. And so, and that's what we're learning in terms of key revitalization areas, is they can and should evolve based on what we don't know, what we don't know. So that happened in March. They added the Thrive 29th Street zone. The one request we will make for consideration next week is to also expand one of the revitalization corridors. So that is a request we will be asking mayor and council to consider. So minor changes.
Great, Lori.
And is it possible, to give some sort of a stipend to the youth person, since they, you know, will more than likely be someone who is experiencing or has experienced homelessness, and it's best practice to pay folks for their expertise. And I think would really help with getting a young person who is, you know, very busy to be able to attend, because we really should have a youth voice at the table.
Good question, Lori. And I'll say, let us look into that. I feel, and I don't know if, Corinne, you know off the top of your head, I feel like there may be something in the code that talks about not being able to pay people. But let's see if there's a way we can do that, because I agree with you. I think in certain cases, we really need to be compensating people for their time. So something we will look into. Neto, let's make sure we talk to the clerk's office and see if that's something we can try to do.
Okay, any other comments or questions on agenda item number 9, the HCD updates? Okay, I'm going to roll through these next few pretty quickly. Agenda item number 10, subcommittee updates. I believe all of the subcommittees did not meet this last month because of the holidays. So were there any subcommittees which met? No. Okay, so we're going to blow through agenda item number 10, straight into agenda item number 11, which is next steps. So we're going to have our next commission meeting on February 2nd. Neto is going to look into if the space is available. That is a 300 Commerce Loop. Is that the address? 301 Commerce Loop Drive? Your offices.
310.
Okay. He'll get back to us on if that space is available. The lion's share of that meeting is going to be the discussions around equity with Loris Walker. As we've said, our retreat is then on February 2nd, the next day. The Affordable Housing Subcommittee is going to send out a doodle poll to confirm our next date. Housing desegregation meets January 25th, and Housing First meets January 30th. Are there any other agenda items that the commissioners would like to see on our March meeting? Marianne? You're on mute.
Want to go back to number 11. Kenny cannot do Monday, Wednesdays, or Fridays for the housing subcommittee. So we really, and you can't do Tuesdays, so we really have to look for everybody else who's on the housing subcommittee. We really have to look at Thursdays. And, you know, hopefully one of the first three Thursdays of the month. So as you do your doodle poll, just, you know, keep that in mind. And then I think for the March meeting, we should ask our facilitators to join us and, you know, do a recap of the retreat.
I think that's part of the plan. Kenny?
Yeah, thanks for that, Marianne. Was just going to propose a third Thursday, if that might work for the other subcommittee members. But I'll also follow up with an email.
Okay, we'll get a doodle poll out tomorrow. We'll figure out what works for everybody. All right, any other agenda items or topics to discuss? Maggie?
Hi, just going back to the presentations, the PCHIP presentations, can we get the recording of this meeting? There was a lot of information, and I wrote pretty fast, but missed a lot.
We'll send it out tomorrow morning.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right, commissioners, if you haven't already sent in your scores, don't forget we need to do that by end of day tomorrow. And everybody have a good night. It's 6:01, so we are adjourned. Arizona basketball is in an hour and a half, so bear down.